Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listick, Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the world of politics and law you watch me cover on television every day to get into my world of passion, which is theater, the arts, comedy, entertainment. Isn't that more fun than the world of politics and law? Well, that's arguable. But joining me today for this episode is, this is somebody, if you don't know the name, you soon will, and you are going to absolutely know so much of what he has done in his life. Danny Franzese joins me, and we're going to, because he's coming to Chicago, he's going to be appearing at Venus Cabaret on June 7th and 8th and 9th, improv comedy. First of all, Danny, hello, and thank you for joining me.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good. Now, I know that formerly in movies, we know you as Daniel, but you said I get to call you Danny.
Yeah, you know, it's the same name to me. I'm just not a Dan. Sounds too plain to describe me.
Oh, yeah, and, no.
And in college, my roommate's name was Dan. We were Danny and Dan, so I'm very not Dan.
Okay. Otherwise, we could bring him in, and then I would have a distinction to make.
That would work, yeah, maybe.
So I'm going to surprise you, I think, with my first reference here, because I know you are used to every interview you're doing, and you do a lot of them, that the whole world wants to immediately bring up the fact that you were one of the stars of the great movie Mean Girls.
I was?
Yeah. Did you not see it?
No, I didn't see it yet. It's on the list.
He's 20 years old. It's time to see it. Where you work with somebody. And I'm going to talk about that to you, with you too, because look, I know that my viewers and listeners want to hear about Mean Girls. So I promise we'll get to it. But you did something else that I am a huge fan of, and maybe we'll stir up some people to go see it again. It's actually your work in the movie Bully, which that goes back even before that to 2001. I love Brad Renfro. I love Michael Pitt. I love that movie. So can we just open with just, I know it was about a murder plot and whatever, but am I the first person to bring that up as like the first thing to mention to you?
No, I mean, Bully gets its own fair share of attention. I mean, definitely Mean Girls, like, you know, it's an attention grabbing thing and it eclipses a lot of conversations, but Bully is something that is still, you know, studied and celebrated by a lot of people. It was a terrific project to be my first project, and you know, I'm proud of it. So
it also goes to show that, you know, while people today, we kind of know you as your comedian, you're doing improv. It's why you're coming to Chicago. Mean Girls, hysterical. I get that. But yet, I guess the reason I wanted to bring it up first, there's a wide range to your performing talents, and it's not just the world of comedy. Actually, I think comedians are probably some of the best and finest dramatic actors.
I agree with that. I think first and foremost, I'm an actor before anything. But I am an entertainer at heart, and anything that is encompassed in the world of entertainment, I have either tried or deuced currently or will do in the future. So I just love to entertain.
I'm going to bring up one more thing before we get to Mean Girls and talk about the fact that you're coming to Chicago in June. I was a huge fan of the show Looking with Jonathan Groff. You were mainly season two, I think, in Looking.
Right, season two in the movie, yes.
And the movie, Looking the movie, because they had to wrap it up and they got unfairly, it got canceled. So I was brilliant that whoever came up with the producer, somebody said, then let's make a movie and wrap this thing up.
Well, as Michael Lombardo was leaving HBO, as the head of HBO, this was like a pet project of his. And I think he knew that it wasn't going to probably get the same attention from you know, the next group of people that were coming in. So he wanted to make sure that the stories and the characters had a good ending.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm really happy he did that. And congratulations to you on that. I love that show. I'm going to bring up something else before I talk about Mean Girls. Because you're also in The Comeback. I don't know how big of an audience that had with Lisa Kudrow. I have that on DVD. I loved that show.
Let me tell you something. That show was so weird because it was the first job I booked when I moved to LA after Mean Girls. And that job cost me $300 to do.
Wait, was that a plane fare?
No, I had to join AFTRA at the time. I was only SAG.
Oh, yeah. That's all you paid for $300? Welcome to AFTRA now.
No. I think that was what was left after what I got paid to do the show. So that was just a funny thing, but I was on that show not knowing anything about it, obviously, because it hadn't aired. or anything. And the episode that I'm in, which is such a great, I think, like, pinnacle episode of when she finally breaks, you know. But I, it was away from the set and everything, and it took place in Palm Springs, so I still didn't really get what was going on. And then when I started watching the show after it came out, I'm like, I love this show. I'm like, this is my favorite show. I'm like, I'm on this show. Like, so it was like such a great thing to like, what a great surprise to see how fantastic the show was when it started to air, and knowing that I was coming up on it at some point. It was really fun.
And I'm pretty sure, I mean, there was a big push, but I think largely from the LGBTQ plus community who wanted that thing back for another
season. Yeah, 10 years later, they ended up bringing it back for another season, which is so fun. And that season really is also a great moment in television history. So I it's just such a, Lisa Kudrow is brilliant. And it was criminal that she wasn't better recognized for it in its day. But now I think it's going to live on as a cult classic.
And of the friends, I know Schwimmer, but I've not met Lisa. I'm just guessing she's just as charming as one would think she would be.
Yeah, I had a great time working with her. I didn't really get to spend a lot of time with her, but I had a lot of fun. Jennifer Elise Cox, who is Jan Brady in the Brady Bunch movies.
Yeah,
I spent a lot of time with her, and really, she's hysterical and just had such a great time. And the resort, the Parker, is so beautiful in Palm Springs, and they closed the whole thing down except for us. So I was able to walk around and explore the whole resort and just hang out. And it was a really unique, fun welcome to Hollywood when I first got to LA.
I love it. Can I bring up something else before I talk about Mean Girls?
You can talk about anything you want to talk about.
I mean, I just know that people that go to Mean Girls, I'm like, there's so much to what you've done. Like, how about I spit on your grave where you played Stanley Woods? What's your memory there?
Well, you know, I Spit on Your Grave is it's a crazy revenge film. And it's known, the original from 1978 by Mayor Zarkey is known as like one of the video nasties in London. Like when they moved VHS tapes over to London, that was one of the ones that was banned. And so it became really famous over there. And here it's also known because Roger Ebert famously wrote a review about it and gave it 0 stars. Because he thought that it was like the end of humanity or something. And then they took the review and made it the poster for the film. And that's what made the film go so crazy over here. I guess viral before viral, you know. And our remake was no different. It was very scary for me to enter. So I turned it down 3 times before I finally said yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh.
Yeah, I had auditioned for it. And then they were like, yeah, we want you. And I was like, I don't know. And I don't know. My agents were like, you should do it. Like, and then it's that actor adage that you hear when you're studying, you know, you should always do something that scares you. Right. And I just was like, I guess this is terrifying, so I'm going to do it. But it's a testament really to the cast and how serious they took everything and how hard we all worked to tell that story. It's an intense movie.
That it is. Well, that actually leads me to an open a follow-up question, and then we'll get to Mean Girls, which is, you know, you're also known, look, you did RuPaul's Drag Race and RuPaul's Celebrity Drag Race, you were a job, just all sorts of great stuff. So is there something, when you look ahead, given this spectrum of work that you've done, is there something that scares you? Is there something you'd say, I'm a little hesitant to do something like that? Would you do that for more?
I really don't know about scaring me. I guess I do want an opportunity to, you know, take the lead of something, be the lead of a movie or be the lead of a show and carry something. I think I'm, you know, after 20 years in the business, I'm ready for that, those kind of opportunities to start coming now that I'm, you know, maturing into roles that are able to carry those kind of stories. So yeah. Storyline. So
maybe I spit on your future. Maybe I spit on your grave, be a series.
I don't know about that, because I would be dead. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah, but each week you bring in a new grave. I mean, I've got to sit. We'll talk about this. We'll plan this.
Okay, all right. We'll see. We'll pitch it.
Okay, Mean Girls. You played Damien back in 2004. I guess I have to ask you, when you look at the roster of people who, I think most of them got their start maybe from the, not Tina Fey or Amy Poehler, but Lindsay Lohan, Rachel.
Well, it was Tina Fey's first movie, yeah.
Okay. I feel like I knew her, though, anyway. Didn't we know her before?
The head writer on SNL, but she wasn't on camera yet. Yeah.
Okay. And all the people. Anna Gasteyer. I mean, just these people who worked in that film. So 2004, I still have a question I'm going to ask you that maybe a lot of people don't. But memories of the movie. How fabulous was it working with all those people as you played Damien, the very out and gay student?
It was exciting. It was, you know, I didn't think it was going to be the huge mega cultural touchstone that it ended up being in a weird way. But like, you know, we were kind of birthed at the same time the internet was birthed. And so everyone kind of, you know, ran with it from there. I just had fun. I was really excited. And it was a lot of dream fulfillment working with Anna Gasteyer and Tim Meadows and Amy Poehler and all of the different SNL cast members and Lorne Michaels. Like, I grew up, you know, knowing who that was and revering him for so long that it was so cool. I mean, I had him do a spit take during the table read, and I think that was like probably one of the greatest accomplishments of my career.
Oh my god!
So it was a fun time. I didn't know that it was going to actually, you know, have so much impact societally in letting you know, young queer or just different people in general see themselves in that character and feel comfortable in their own skin, because the character was like, you know, living and breathing and comfortable. And that's, you know, led to a whole lifetime of thinking about legacy work and the projects that I choose.
Yeah. I met Lauren Michaels once. We had an SNL, a tribute of, not even an event, it was an ongoing exhibit here in Chicago at the Museum of Broadcast. And he came to the opening of it, and so did Colin Jost, and Tim Meadows was there. And it's just meeting these people, as you say, just the notion of, although you got to sit across from a table and talk to them. I just had him, you know, they had to remove me from security. But anyway, not really. But out of curiosity, so you said you didn't realize the sort of iconic film this would become. Just in your interactions with other people or since then, Tina Fey, Anna Gasteyer, did anybody look back and say, oh no, we knew this was going to happen?
No, I don't think anyone really knew that it was going to be that huge. I mean, maybe Mark Waters and Tina Fey and Lauren Michaels and Lindsay had some kind of thing going on, because Lindsay and Lohan and Mark Waters had made Freaky Friday and had just made Mega Millions and had become a big hit, and now they were re-teaming again. So maybe they're like, maybe we can like catch lightning in a bottle a second time. And you know, I mean, it was an exciting time for sure, definitely. And I mean, I'm so grateful to have been a part of it. I'm just, again, it's the social impact of it all that I can't believe still exists. This young director, Yasad Akub, who's been winning awards for directing music videos and directed the movie Cherry Pop and all these other things. And he was at the Queerty Awards and he won an award, and he came to me afterwards and he said, Habibi, when I was young and I was living in Dubai, he's like, I only saw gay people that were ostracized or punished for who they were. He's like, and somehow, because Damien didn't say he was gay and didn't have a boyfriend and didn't have a kiss, that he was able to make it past the censors, and I knew I could come to America and be an artist. And to me, there's nothing greater as an artist than to inspire other artists to pursue what they want to do and let them know that they can because of what you do. And it just goes to show how much inclusion, diversity, and representation matter, especially in media and in art and in projects. And so it's just an honor of mine that I'm a small part of his great story.
That is so fantastic. And I'm going to use that comment as something. I think there's something that gets blurred in people's knowledge of you or tie to you, because I think people, you know, we have short memories, right? And so I think people probably say, well, this, you know, that Danny was Damien, and oh yeah, he's been out forever. Why, he's just been part of the LGBTQ community forever. And so what we might be surprising people, maybe not, maybe I'm wrong, but I think we're surprising people when I say, and I'll have you respond to it, that actually when you played Damien in 2004, you were not, it was another 10 years before you actually came out.
Yeah. I mean, I had gone to conversion therapy, and I had dealt with a lot of like internal, even though I had an affirming family, I was living in Florida and I had dealt with a lot of issues with like what society and what, you know, how people treat you and everything. So I had just come out of that, moved to New York City, and decided I'm just going to be myself, and really found myself, started like dating and going out and like working in some gay bars and stuff. And then I booked Mean Girls, and I was terrified of being found out. So I went back into the closet. So it was like that's maybe why it's like very weird. You know, I was very comfortable around my friends. And so then when I moved to Los Angeles, I, you know, just tried to, what it was really that signified me was my agents and my reps and everyone around me, publicists, all those people were just like, you don't have to say you're gay. Like, no one's really asking. So just keep it quiet and just do your own thing and be an actor. And so I wasn't like, I was just trying to be the characters that I was portraying instead of being how Daniel Franzese, like being out and being who I am in front of people and making my voice heard and known. And, you know, so I was just more focusing on the behind the scenes and being like a performer at the time in the beginning of my career. But then it became politically important to speak out. You know, there was things like Prop 8 happening. And, I, you know, at first when I got Mean Girls, there were casting directors that were like, yeah, we don't want Daniel to audition for this role because, you know, we want a man's man, instead of like seeing me or finding out what my abilities were. Or, you know, I doubt if I was out, I would have been cast in I Spit on Your Grave. And they were like begging me to be in the movie. So it's like, that's a great example. You know, I don't think I would have been cast in Bully. I don't think I would have been cast in some of the projects. And I think that I've suffered since coming out of being not cast in a lot of other projects. But to me, at this point, it's more important to be vocal and honest and communicative to my audience, and to be a representation of what I think other people who don't see themselves are. And the gifts that have come back to me because of that have been outweighed way more than maybe a couple of movies that I haven't been in.
Is there anybody who is sort of maybe a model for you? I mean, when you told that story, my mind went to Sean Hayes, who's somewhat of a friend of mine. And when Sean grew up here in Chicago, he was out. Everybody knew he was gay. But of course, as you know, the beginning part of his career, he's not out, and he's doing Will and Grace and whatever. But probably concerned, as so many gay actors are before they come out, that I'm never going to work again, or I'm going to be typecast or something like that. Did you have a role model or somebody you looked at and said, well, this person can do it? Or was it just your own inner strength that led you to make the decisions you made?
There really wasn't many people doing it. You know, I mean, now looking back, the people that were doing it, I think of them as so brave. You know, I thought of them as foolish early on, but now I think of them as so brave. Like some of my contemporaries that I've seen who have, like, you know, always played out gay characters. You know, some of us, you know, also have the luxury of being able to code switch. And some of us are just unequivocally gay or non-binary or trans and can't hide who we are. And just, you know, so I think that maybe I had a little bit of privilege in being able to code switch a little bit and act a little more straight or something. But I think that I didn't really have that many role models, to be honest with you. And I think in that same token, sometimes the trailblazers get the arrows and not the land, you know, like maybe because I see all these young kids that are all out and like living their lives free and being celebrated for that. And, you know, it took years before like GLAAD recognized me, or I was written about in a gay magazine, or I, you know, or like my own community. And then like I was being, you know, I wasn't going to end up in GQ or any of those other things, being somebody who is overweight and somebody who is ethnic and all these other different things. It was just like, you know, so I was battling all these things in the beginning of my career, wondering how to fit in, when the answer was just to like take a deep breath and just be myself. And I think that that's a message that I just love to let people know, like, you know, like get out, you know, as much as we enjoy playing characters, there's nothing that's going to be more interesting, and no one could create anything more interesting than who you are.
And what's so important is taking what you just said. Look, you could have just, you know, come out however you chose to do that and then do what you do for your career, and you do. But there's another piece of you, which is the activism piece. You've referenced it a little bit, but I do want to talk a little bit because I think it's just very important. And certainly years ago when you started to be more out, I know you worked with Lambda Legal, which is essentially an LGBTQ plus group of lawyers and people working in that community. We have something here in Chicago. It's called Lagback. It's a little bit differently. I used to be part of that, but it's it's not terribly active anymore, as far as I know. Maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, work with HIV and AIDS and all of that. So you actually decided to take your public pulpit and say, I'm going to do something. I'm going to make a difference, and that's an important part of who you are, I think.
Well, I feel like after I came out, I felt such a intense embrace from the world. Like it was just, you know, I felt like just accepted and loved and comfortable. And the letters I got just really, I said, I want to do something more in my life for these people that like are giving me all this love back. And I just had to like think about it for a while. And I was doing a meditation challenge. It was like an Oprah Deepak Chopra, like 21-day meditation challenge. And I don't remember any of them, but one of them was, do you live a life of service? And it really struck me. I was like, what could I do for my community? What more can I do? And I started to ask that question to myself every day. And, you know, the answers came to me very quickly after that. Like once you start opening yourself up to service, you'd be surprised how many people ask you for that. So, you know, and I always like to say, I'm not always the smartest person on every topic in every room, but I am a pretty loud megaphone. So if I could have a really smart person next to me who's got a really good cause, and maybe they don't have a voice that is as visible as maybe mine, I will be happy to lend my voice to people who don't have the ability to get that pulpit or get that moment to stand up on the soapbox. So I don't want to be too preachy. I don't want to be too weird. I don't want to be too pushy when it comes to activism. But I do think that there are things that we have to speak up on. I lobby Congress every year on behalf of Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation at AIDS Watch. Because of my character and looking, I became so aware of all of that. And even as a negative person, I could show what an ally is by showing up still every day. Even though I'm not on the show 10 years later, I'm still in Washington, you know? And I think that that's how we can have other allies realize how to support us. So
I'm not going to get into the world of Trump and all that kind of stuff, except just to say, sometimes I think it's surprising for people that, you know, you have the log cabin folks, Republican, you know, gay Republicans, essentially LGBTQ Republicans, who then will support anti-gay candidates and all that kind of stuff. Any explanation for that? Sometimes, I mean, the answer they'll give you is, well, you know, there's certainly policies and we have to be part of it because that's how you get them to open their eyes to all of this. And you haven't thought about that?
I definitely think, like, I'm from Florida. I mean, I'm Italian from Brooklyn, but I grew up in Florida. I still live half of the year in Florida. And I think Florida is a very protected bubble when it comes to information and stuff like that. You know, you walk around Los Angeles, you walk around New York, you might, Chicago even, you might catch a piece of graffiti even that might make you think differently, or a zine, or somebody doing a performance or a demonstration on the street. But I'm not catching that stuff in Florida. I'm catching palm trees and opinions of other people that are in the bubble, you know? And, you know, the government's really good at disguising certain things. You know, DeSantis in Florida can, you know, sweep Don't Say Gay under the rug, or sweep critical race theory or comprehensive sexual education, but then make tolls cheaper. And everyone's thrilled about the tolls. So I think, like, a lot of it is like local issues that people aren't, thinking about necessarily. And so I don't know if everyone's getting all the same information all the time, even though we live in the information age. I think water cooler talk changes based on where you live. And I think the pandemic has made a lot of more liberal thinking or free thinking people move to some more red states or more places where people aren't having that kind of conversation. And I think I do feel a little bit of a cultural shift happening where people are starting to have different kinds of conversations. But I think that's all we have to do. It's kind of, you know, I have this podcast called Yash Jesus, where we talk about the intersectionality between faith and sexuality.
I was actually going there next.
Oh, perfect, because this is a good segue into it. But I think a lot of the times is like, we're just not having those kind of discussions. You know, we're not talking about that type of thing. People have one way of thinking. They're taught one way of thinking, and they're not expanding their mind to other places and opening them up. And I think that this is that politics is the same kind of example. You're told what things are. And if you don't, you know, read the Bible for yourself, if you don't go and read the laws for yourself, if you're not actually out there voting, you're not going to be aware of like what's exactly happening. The term woke has been used as sort of like weaponized against people who are more free thinking, I guess. But it literally means to be awoken, like, and to wake up to what's happening to marginalized communities and what's happening to some people. And I think I'm just like awake to that. And it's hard to go back to sleep after that. You know, once you're woke, it's kind of hard to go back to sleep.
And so you do your, it's kind of a comedy and faith, right? Broadcast kind of combined. Yeah. By the way, where can people listen to that or watch it?
The easiest place would be yashjesuspod.com. We are on WoW Podcast, though, and we are off with World of Wonder, and we are on everywhere you can get a podcast. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, we're everywhere.
Easy enough to find. And so I guess, you know, and so faith is an important part of your life, too. And I'm sort of curious, does it also, I promise we're going to lighten up in just a second, but I just, you know, to get to talk to you a little seriously, I hope that's okay with you.
I'm fine. I'm never, you know, I'm not afraid of any of this. So,
what is your sense about people who are strongly driven by faith, but sometimes onlookers might look and go, I don't get it. You're a person of faith, but you're doing some things that don't look like they're part of your faith.
You know, the Reverend Yvette Flounder said that just the worst disservice that man ever did to the Bible was put a back cover on it. Mm. Like, just because, you know, men were done writing doesn't mean God was done speaking, you know, and women. And what a great phrase. And I think that that's really the way to look at it. Like, I think that if we're listening instead of talking, you're going to learn a lot more from God and from everything else around you, you know? So it's like, I think a lot of people are used to, it'd be one thing if like the only time you ever tried a tomato was when somebody served it as ketchup to you. Like, you have to go and like find it on the vine and figure out how to prepare it yourself. And then you can realize that a tomato can have all kinds of uses and have all kinds of interpretations and be either delicious and nurturing to you, or it could be something that could be poisoning you because of what's in it. And I think that you need to find it for yourself. And I think that goes with politics, that goes with religion, that even goes with art. I think a lot of it, like, you know, if you're even being taught acting in a certain way, like, and you're not experiencing it for yourself and trying to find your own methods and things like that, you're just going to end up with a packet of ketchup.
By the way, when you come to Chicago, if you were to have a hot dog here, you understand that the ketchup thing won't work because you're not allowed to put ketchup on hot dogs in Chicago.
Well, I don't need ketchup anyway. I don't need sugar, so we're good. We're good.
Okay. All right.
I am a sauerkraut and spicy mustard guy, so I'm
all good. Right. So you're not going to offend anybody. Well, let's talk a little bit about the show you're coming here to do, because here we've had this deep conversation, which I really appreciate, because I always just think that people who are funny and do their things, that there's more to them. And this is my opportunity to kind of go beneath the surface a little bit. So thank you for doing that. But the reason you agreed to talk to me is because you want to talk about the show you're going to do here in Chicago on June 7th, 8th, and 9th. So I'm guessing maybe Ginger Minj has something to do with your upcoming visit.
Yes, my good sis, Ginger Minj. We have been friends for quite some time. We met through friends and stuff and through the drag race world, but then have done so many shows together. We've been in Rocky Horror Show together. We've been in, we did a live stage of Roseanne, a live show of Roseanne together. And now Ginger's bringing me out there to do my stand-up comedy. And I'm so excited because I have toured the world doing stand-up and I have never played Chicago. All these years, I've been in Chicago for so many other reasons and appearances and things like that, but I've just never done stand up in Chicago. And, you know, my comedy is going to do well over there, I think, because I'm Italian and I've got, like, you know, I got those vibes, and I'm just really excited to go there and show them a little bit of what I've been working on.
And you know, speaking of Italian, you know what? The Venus Cabaret, so I know you've not been there yet. It's a fabulous, you're going to love the room. Jay Rodriguez just played it. I interviewed Jay for this, and well, I love Jay. And so you'll love the room you're in. It's intimate, and if you want to interact, I mean, I've seen some of your activity. So I don't know how much you'll want to interact with the audience, but they will certainly be able to interact with you if you choose. But you know what's playing? It's connected to the Mercury Theater. So speaking of Italian, whatever, do you know what's playing next door right now?
No, what's playing?
The Jersey Boys.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there you go. Speaking
this
of
is
that.
One of, this is like the first regional theater that was given the rights, because they held on to it for, they've been trying to get it for over 10 years to get Jersey Boys. It is open now. So I hope you maybe spend a little more time than just the 7th, 8th, and 9th that you'll be performing here, and maybe come, like, have some fun in Chicago. Like, just go next door and see the Jersey Boys. The cast is
I would down. Absolutely love that. I mean, I see a play or a musical a week. Like, literally, that's like one of my passions. Like, you know, I see at least a movie or a movie a week and a play or musical a week. And I'm very excited. I hope I get to catch some live theater while I'm in Chicago. I love Chicago theater.
I hope so too. Yeah, and we do have a lot of it. You know that.
Behind the Curtain, let everybody know I want to come to Chicago and do a play sometime. I'd love to do my play. I have a full length play, Italian Mom Loves You, based on my character, my Italian mom character. And I would love to take it to Chicago. So maybe who knows, maybe if someone comes and sees my stand up.
Yeah, well, there's also, see, now you have my mind spinning, because there are some, you know, I don't mean forget, but Steppenwolf and Goodman, whatever, that's probably not going to, you know, be the place that you're going to end up, but there are so many fantastic environments and theaters in this city. I think there's more here than New York, and you might not even know of some of them, so the answer is that is not just a pipe dream that you have. That is something that could easily happen. We'll talk more about that. Perhaps I'll meet you when you're here and visit that.
I would love that.
So for people who watch your app, and I've seen some of your acts, and what is it we're going to hear about? We get a lot about your life and a past fiance, and I don't know, what's today's focus going to be?
I mean, I talk about my mom a lot, my life. I try to keep it in a very relatable place. So it's just like observations on life, you know, like just keeping it really light and funny. I mean, I just like to have a good time. I don't do things that alienate people. I'm not too political in my comedy. I keep that for my private work.
And that's why I didn't push you in that.
Right. So when people come to the show, they don't have to expect any of that. They don't have to worry about it. Like, you can bring your Trump dad or whatever. Like, it's fine. Everyone will laugh and have a good time.
By the way, ages. I mean, how would you say, I mean, when the stuff of yours.
That's the weirdest things about my shows is, like, my shows are packed with, like, 60-year-old Italian ladies and their husbands. And then, like, you know, and then they'll be like kids, like, you know, like teenagers and college kids. So it's like, it's so fun. I really do reach a very wide, different audience.
How do you, you know, I love talking to comedians, because there's some, you know, the days, I don't know if they're gone, but the days were a joke teller, a Henny Youngman, whoever it was, they weren't really ever talking about their lives. They were telling jokes, or they were, you know, Jerry Lewis was hysterical. I mean, they were, you know, when appropriate, you know, they would do their things. But in your comedy, it really does start with your life. It seems your belief is that comedy comes from personal experience, and we look at the funny of what we're living.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think that no one's going to steal a joke from you if it's about my mom. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the more, like, you know, we all have a very similar thoughts. I think I don't consume enough other stand-up comedy to know if I'm saying a joke someone else said. So I'm always just doing things that are, like, personal to me. And then, nobody else could do them. So I think that's what I like about what I do, is that all I need is me and a mic and my brain and a microphone, and I'm able to just put a performance on. Just give me like a Singalodeon in your backyard and I could give you an hour show, you know? And I think that as an actor, you know, we have such a longing to perform and such a longing to entertain. And a lot of times we rely on gatekeepers to say, okay, you're good enough, or you're okay enough, or I want you on this production and you're going to play this character and you're going to do this. But when it comes to stand up and writing plays and stuff like I do, it's, I get to do whatever I want. I get to create what I want. It's such a beautiful thing, because as if a painter would create the actual canvas himself, mix the paints himself, create the paintbrush himself, and then paint the painting, I get to do everything myself. So I really do love that. And my collaborator is the audience. So when I'm out there and I'm performing and I'm connecting with them, I'm like, they laughed at this. They loved that. They laughed harder when I said it this way. And so I enjoy the interaction with the audience. I'm a theater person at heart. That is like where my soul is at. And so for me to have that connection, I love to be a puppeteer for people's laughter and say, okay, you know, and like work on the audience and feel them out. And in the same token with dramatic work, I just love the connection and the vibration that we all get. You know, there's very few experiences outside of entertainment or sports, I guess, where we're all sitting in one place together and experiencing what we're all gasping together. We're all cheering together. We're all laughing together. And I think there's something about the human instrument that's so beautiful in that. Much like the Stradivarius violin, if I have one in this room and I pluck the C chord, and then I have like a bunch of them in the kitchen and the other side of my house, all the C chords will vibrate because they're so sensitive. Imagine human beings, like when we're all in one room together and I'm able to like pluck everybody's C chord and get everyone to just react and feel something, we can forget that, you know, the world's on fire.
Would you mind getting your Stradivarius and just demonstrating that for us?
Yeah, no problem. Definitely. Yeah.
You know, I've seen a couple of your routines, and one of the things I love getting to talk to you, because all these things are in my head and then I just ask you. I feel as though clearly there's a script of sorts that's in your mind, but I have this feeling that people who come see you on June 7th at 8 o'clock, and then who come back maybe on June 9th at 5 o'clock, I don't think they get 100% of the same show. There's a sense of improv to what you, and improv's part of your background. So am I right? You're not tightly scripted.
No, actually, like when I do something that's like a 45 minute to an hour set, I probably have 2.5 hours worth of material. I'm filtering through that, plus making stuff on the spot and connecting with the audience and sort of like going in and out of like things that I know that they might, I'm like, oh, they really like that story, they're going to love this story, and add it in. It's weird, because if anything, I just have notes of like, oh, I should try that or try this, but I don't even like ever have to take much things with me on stage, because I feel it out in the moment and it just comes, and I'm like, oh, I didn't talk about that yet. You know, like, yeah. And it kind of feels like when you're catching up with an old friend and you're like, oh, and I got to cover this, and oh, I got to tell you about my new job, and oh, I didn't even tell you about who I'm dating, and I didn't tell you about. So it's like, that's the energy that I really like in my shows, is that I have all these things I want to tell people about, and depending on how they're reacting or what they're enjoying, I kind of know the stories that they'll like.
So here's the questions I don't know the answer to. So we'll find out. When Jay was here, he did a meet and greet afterwards. People could stay after and take pictures and stuff. Do you plan to do that?
I always do a meet and greet. I will meet every single person that ever wants to say hello to me that comes to my shows. I love it. I mean, I do conventions and stuff where, like, you know, people pay to meet me and buy merch and things like that. And in the beginning, I tried to do those for free, and they were like, we want to support you. Like, you don't have anything we could buy. And I was like, oh, and now I get how those work. But when it comes to my shows, I love to just meet people. I'll take selfies with anybody. I'll stick around and meet every single person that wants to say hi to me. I don't like run out the back door. I really like to spend, like, because I really feel like I have it's a meet and greet fan base that I have, because I love connecting with people. I myself, as a young fan and a young performer, would go specifically to opening night performances, hoping to be a party that I could weasel my way into and meet people and get to meet the actors. And so when people have that energy, or they're excited to meet me, I'm excited. And people are like, what is it like? Everyone stopping on the street or meeting after your shows? Like, does it get kind of weird or whatever? I'm like, it's weird if people are weird. It's nervous, nerve wracking if people are nervous. It's mostly sweet, because people are mostly sweet to me. So I just really do enjoy meeting everyone.
Can I buy your hat?
Can you buy my hat? Y'all, yeah. Y'all means all.
I love it.
Yeah, I picked that up at Palm Beach Pride in Florida when I hosted a couple weeks ago.
There you are. Well, it's a good hat. Everybody needs to go see Daniel Franzese. I'll put it that way. On June 7th and June 8th at 8 p.m. and June 9th at 5 p.m. Tickets at biggaycabaret.com, because that's kind of Ginger Minja's world. Biggaycabaret.com at the Venus Cabaret on Southport. You'll love the venue. I think you're going to love the audiences you get here, and I think you're going to come back to Chicago a lot. Thank you, Danny.
I'm so excited to be there. Please, everyone, find me at What's Up Danny or find Yash Jesus Pod at yashjesuspod.com. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I cannot wait to come to Chicago and eat a hot dog properly.
I'm going to do it. I'm thinking for pizza.
Let's do it.
Real quick, while we were talking, my partner emailed me. Are you talking to him yet? Can you? I'm going to put you on the spot. Can you just, I'm holding a camera. Can you just say a quick, real quick thing to Raphael? Just say, or Rafi. Say hi to Rafi.
Yeah.
Go.
Hi, Rafi. How you doing? You don't even go here, but you can totally sit with us when I come into town and go have pizza with you guys.
All right. With that, we're going to get cut off. Thank you, Danny. I'll see you in June. Be well.
I appreciate you so much. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Oh, by the way, you don't live in Omaha, do you?
What's that?
Somebody came through from Omaha from you. That's not you.
That's my assistant. Yeah, he lives in Omaha, and when I'm in the I land there sometimes, and we travel together around the Midwest.
Gotcha. Okay. I wouldn't think you live in Omaha. All right. Thank you. Be well.
Take care.